on my mind.
And welcome to episode 52 of the award-winning Combat Sports Podcast, The Boxing Show, with me, your host, Rob Tebbutt. As always, I'd like to remind everybody to please like, comment, and subscribe. Turn your notifications on for more boxing content. Now, that's out of the way. I am joined by the usual twosome of Mr. Barry Jones and Mr. Andy Clark as we look ahead to this weekend, next weekend, but we're filming early, Cinco de Mayo, Canelo Alvarez against Jaime Munguia. How are we doing, guys?
I just got attacked by... There's a picture here. I got to sit talking to the microphone. There's a picture here of Mike Tyson. You probably can't see it. He just fell and hit me on the head. And then... Didn't it that hard.
Sparring for the Jake Paul fight.
Well, he needs... If he had harder than that, he got no chance.
Anyway, some kind of paranormal activity, I think.
I needed witnesses for the...
No, for the lawsuit.
If anybody's an injury lawyer...
the boxing show brought to you by Injury Lawyers for You. Anyway, we all know everybody's okay because we did this already for last week's show. But anyway, let's jump into it.
Unless you don't see me for a couple of weeks, then.
Barry's in hospital now in a full body cast because he was attacked by the Mike Tyson.
If this is the last time you see me, I just, my will and testament, I don't want to leave anything to my missus or my kids. nothing, none of them. I haven't got nothing anyway. No, nothing. Nothing at all.
You're leaving it to Boxing News, are you? Is that?
That's that. Leave it all to Rob Tebbutt.
There we go.
Imagine if I did die now and that was like...
Oh, don't worry, mate.
That was the thing. Leave
we
it
got
to
it.
You.
We got it on video.
I've got no cake in my house, so you're fine.
Andy, so this weekend, Canelo Alvarez against Jaime Munguia. It's the Mexican Civil War, is how I've dubbed it. I've actually been dubbing it the Mexican Super Bowl because it's a very, very exciting Cinco de Mayo. What's your excitement? I'm always keen to come to you for excitement level check, Andy.
Well, no, I'm bang up for it. I mean, this is, you know, it's... There's always massive speculation about who's he going to fight next, and the longer you go on, the more difficult it becomes to find opponents that are going to inspire real excitement in the general boxing public. But I think this does because as you say, it's the Mexican Super Bowl, and I think we do feel, most people feel anyway, that maybe Canelo, after 16, 17 years as a pro now, he's not that old, but you have to look at how long somebody's been doing something to get a sense of where they're at in terms of miles on the clock. I think most people feel like he is going down the other side of the hill and that he is possibly a bit more vulnerable than he used to be, or beatable might be a better word for it. And Munguia, you look at him and you feel like it's not beyond the realms of possibility that he could get the win. So this is a proper fight. It's a real fight. And that's what you want. That's what you want to watch, isn't it? You want to watch something where you feel like you don't know what is going to happen. That's what we want from sport. A lot of the time we think we know, and then it turns out we didn't. We're familiar with that feeling.
Especially on
this podcast. But that's good. That's good. You don't want to watch something where you feel like you know what is going to happen. My wife's become obsessed with Formula One since piling through Drive to Survive, and you know, at the minute Max Verstappen wins, and that's pretty much that, and that's, you know, Formula One, I'm sure, are looking at that and thinking, that's not great, is it? That's not great. We need to do something about this. And any kind of monopoly in any sport is a bad thing. And I've gone well off track there.
That's okay.
but at the same time, yeah, you want to feel like you don't know necessarily what is going to happen. And I don't feel like this is an open and shut case that Canelo's definitely going to win. And on to the next one, who will it be in September?
We've come to the right three people here, because we always get it wrong, don't we? We never know who's going to win.
Yeah, we had a good little spell until we rubbished the notion that Ryan Garcia could win.
Yeah, as did everybody else.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, it's not us, it's the fighters who are messing up. They should be winning.
Like, didn't get the script.
He's just crap, isn't he?
Barry, Andy just mentioned there was a lot of talk around Canelo Alvarez. Was he going to box Edgar Belanga? Was he going to box David Benavidez, of course, was the name that's been kind of bandied about.
He's definitely boxing Benavidez, isn't he?
But he's landed on Jaime Munguia. Happy? Pleased? Excited?
It's a good fight. It's not the fight, though.
No.
I don't want to go down the Paul Malignaggi route, but he's right. Like, it should be David Benavidez. It should be. I mean, and you can fight when you're the number one fighter in the world commercially, you can fight who you want. That's the truth of it. That's the sport. It's always been that way and always will be that way. You can fight who you want to fight, but relinquish the titles then. If you're WP, and that's the problem. We crave for a undisputed champion, but then the solutions just cause more problems. I've been practicing that. Does that go okay?
That was good, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, good.
They do, don't they? Because all we have now is that he doesn't have to pick Benavidez because he has other mandatory challenges. He can go with them instead. And everyone will bend towards him because he's such a big draw and everyone wants the money, the organisations and everyone involved. And he's been a great servant of the sport, by the way, Canelo. Let's not forget that he has. But it should be David Benavidez should be the fighter. Should be the fighter. Let's get out of the way now. And I'll go on about it for another 10 minutes.
No, agreed. I mean, I think everybody thinks that.
That should be the fight, but he doesn't want him because of the stage of a career he's at now. I don't blame him. The stage of a career he's at now, that's a high energy fight. He's a guy who's massive. He's going to cause him problems. A guy who's now a light heavyweight, of course, he's moved on. But I mean, that's understandable. But Canelo has had some tremendous challenges along the way. People think he's been cherry picking fighters, but maybe he has a little bit. But he's also had the toughest test. He boxed Golovkin twice. Kept Golovkin waiting for a couple of years, but still boxed him twice, but Golovkin was a good fighter. And I thought he lost both of those fights. But the Munguia fight is a dangerous fight for him, I think, stylistically, because of the youth. And you're going off the last wins against the same opponent. He did a far better job on John Ryder than Canelo did. Canelo was considerably slowed down. He's still dangerous because he's heavy-handed. But I just think he's hasn't had to have that same fear and energy in his work that he had to have against people like Golovkin, because he just felt that I can just beat people up. And in that super, when he went through that super middleweight division in, what was it, 11 months?
Just over
11 months, which is phenomenal in itself. He barely got a second gear and just walked through some good fighters and just beat them up. Just because he could. I think that's not going to work for him anymore. But I think he's in the habit now. I don't think he has that acceleration and a pace that he once had, that he had to have against Golovkins and other fighters. And that's where this makes the Munguia fight really difficult, because Munguia is a high-energy fighter with plenty of power and showed a bit more structure to his work against John Ryder. He's made loads of mistakes in the past, Munguia, but he'd try and walk you down, but he'd be a bit of a bully. But he was hittable. And I think he was a better fighter against... He didn't overcommit against John Ryder. When he hurt him, he didn't rush in like a lunatic like he did in the past. He slowly walked, he went through the gears. I thought he was really good. He's not going to be able to get away with that against Canelo, but it makes it a more closer fight than it would have been a year ago, 18 months ago, where Munguia maybe could have still been arguably in line for fighting him, I would have thought. Munguia's been around for a long time. He's only 15.
Forget about it. Remember, he jumped in at the last minute to box Saddam Ali for a £154 WBO title. I'm not sure. I have to go back and check.
15,
I think, probably. I think 16, it was because Avtantil Kurtzidis was supposed to fight him. I think. I'm not sure. Cause he was a
that would have been around that time, wouldn't it?
I'm not sure because he was a middleweight. It might be somebody else. Somebody pulled out late. I'll have to try and run out. Somebody pulled out late. Because remember, Munguia at the time was kind of flitting between... junior middleweight, super welterweight, light middleweight, or whatever, and middleweight, and then he come down for it, didn't he?
Yeah, then he beat Liam Smith, then, didn't he? And so, he's been a good, but he's been around for a long time, so there's not miles on the clock there, but he's no, in boxing terms, he's been around like Canelo, similar to Canelo, really. Yeah, he's been around a long time, but still, the amount of fights Canelo's had, 65, 66,
yeah,
maybe 67
that.
Fights, maybe. Hell, a load of fights, haven't he, Canelo? Yeah. 65, I think it is, off the top of my head. But either way, for a man of his age, that's a lot of fights to have had. And some of them have been testing fights, certainly late in his career, because he's...
Again, big fights, big training camps.
Yeah, and the energy in his work has changed. He bullies you now more than outworks you. But I still make him a favourite in this fight. I think he will know a little bit too much for Munguia. And I think he will force... What Canelo does so well is that front foot pressure that those Eastern Bloc fighters do so well. He does it. And Mexican fighters do it, but they usually do it behind a lot of high-energy work. But he does it with just the front foot at its own. Puts you in a corner, force you to throw when you don't want to throw, force you to make a mistake, makes you panic all the time. Because his reputation now precedes him. But that will start to wane, because... No, going boxing Canelo, it's a Canelo night. And it will be. Though I'll tell you, when Munguia boxed in Phoenix, it was a massive crowd against John Ryder. Very loud. He got enough fans of his own, so he'll bring a crowd of his own, I think. Unless they all sold to Canelo fans. But I just think Mexican fans are Mexican fans, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? I don't think they're all like pro Canelo.
I don't know. Like, you would be surprised. I think we've mentioned this in the past. And by the way, it was Liam Smith who pulled out because that would have drove me crazy. Liam Smith was supposed to box Saddam Ali, and then he pulled out and Munguia stepped in. But anyway, we've said this in the past that you'd be surprised. Like, we've done some stuff with Canelo in Spanish for Spanish clients. And like around the Triple G3 fight was one of them where it's like Tellers, because that was in the September. So Mexican Independence Weekend, it was like, basically tell us what a great honor it is to fight as a Mexican on Mexican Independence Day, yada yada yada, and put it out, and the client put it out, and you would be amazed at the amount of Mexican fans who, we don't recognize you, you're not our champion, you're only Mexican. Because it's helped with the marketing, you're this. He's not like Munguia is the Mexican baby face in this one. He's somebody who is perceived to be more Mexican, like Canelo is kind of viewed, and certainly I'm sure it's not the case widespread across Mexico. I'm sure he does have a substantial support, but there is a discerning view of some boxing fans and sports fans in Mexico that Canelo is kind of an Americanized Mexican, and that he's not the Mexican, he's not a Chavez.
It could be one of those guys.
No one's Chavez, but you know what I mean.
It could be a problematic relationship for a big stars who kind of, you know, are as big as the sport, if you like. Their relationship with their home country can quite often be problematic because they get taken out of their home country almost all of the time, unless in boxing, say, you're from the USA. Because everybody needs to go to the USA to make it big. And I still think that's the case. Mm. And you tend to get underappreciated for that reason, because people don't really see you as much. Anthony Joshua, although obviously he has had his detractors and he's rode that roller coaster like everybody else has, of being brilliant and then all of a sudden you lose one fight and you're hopeless. He's mostly boxed in the UK, but Amir Khan went and boxed in the USA, didn't he? And British audiences, for some reason, after a while, seemed to decide that maybe he wasn't really the answer and they'd rather see him lose than see him win. And it's just the way it can go sometimes. And in sport too, you do get to a stage, don't you, where people do want a changing of the guard. And we might kind of be there with Canelo. We might be at that stage where people think he's been amazing, but, you know, wouldn't it not be better if we had a bit of an upset here and Munguia beat him for boxing generally? Would that not be more interesting? And the answer is, yeah, it probably would be. And that's the life cycle you're on, isn't it? And resisting it, as Mayweather managed to do, is a very, very, very hard thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think Canelo will obviously is the bigger name and is the bigger draw, obviously. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if when they go in there on the night, it's Jaime Munguia who has kind of the more vocal Mexican support on the night.
It'll be
a part of that as well. Part of that as well was that first Golovkin fight. I know that was because you remember at the time Golovkin was built as Mexican style, coming out with
and he's Sombrero, a real fighter,
and he's a come forward and
hardcore
destroyer
fans' favorite. Golovkin, isn't he?
Exactly. And I know there was a video of, I can't remember what fight it was, where Canelo's, where he's still with Golden Boy, and they hadn't done the first Golovkin fight, where there's a Mexican fan heckling him while he's at ringside, and he's just basically shouting like, when are you going to fight Golovkin? You need to fight Golovkin. And it went around, it went viral around the time. You can see sort of Canelo looking back in disgust at this Mexican fan. But you remember at the time, like, Canelo vacated the WBC title. Like, it was a long drawn out process getting to that first Golovkin fight. And I think that
had some of the other stuff like the Cotto fight, you know, dragging Cotto down to 155, even though that's supposed to be a WBC world middleweight title fight. People look at stuff like that, and a lot of the time they don't like it.
Kovalev, by all accounts, had a rehydration clause. Like that's one of the things that Mexican fans in some of the stuff that they do say about Canelo, they do look at it as like it's a cherry picker. He's not this. He's not that.
Yeah,
he's
but you know, I bet you though, that's always happened. We never knew. Because we didn't have
the
internet and all the people and the people want to give information though. They almost want to volunteer information, don't they? People just grass themselves up all the time though, thanks to the internet, pretty much.
Shout out Ryan Garcia.
I don't know if there's anyone could be any criminal anymore, because you just want to tell people like, yes, I went out last night, look what I got. It's like a bullion. But he did fight Golovkin. It was a great fight, and the way he performed, you know, I thought he lost. I thought he lost them both, actually.
But again, that's another thing that probably people will just put as
but again,
a
it's not his fault, though, is it? Like, he didn't score the fight. I think he showed, but it was a great fight to be. And you couldn't get more of a Mexican standoff like him. Like, he, I mean, the shots he took off Golovkin, enough. I was ringside for both of them, like, privileged. Now, the first one might be the best fight I'd worked, actually. I mean, the shots he took off Golovkin. I mean, no, Golovkin could punch. We all know that. There's no exaggeration there. So how hard he could hit. Like, he punched right through Canelo's head. I mean, he took his jaw off. Like, I mean, flush. The Canelo's a massive, like, since he boxed Mayweather, of riding a shot. But some of those Golovkin shots he took flush.
Yeah.
And he didn't even blink. And that was more impressive than the shot. You know it's good when, like, you know, you should be praising the punch, and you're just thinking, "Fucking hell!" He's not only just he's not still standing. He's like, he didn't even blink. He didn't even, like, nothing. No reaction. He just fired back. Unbelievable. It was a great fight to be in. And if you were a Mexican fan, you'd love him for that alone. I can't say you, or you wouldn't. But the Benavidez thing leaves a bad taste in the mouth. He's at a stage of his career now that he's just thinking, "Why do I want to fight Benavidez for those millions of punches? He's massive. Like, it's just a hard fight for me, where I can earn the same amount of money for boxing anybody." But Munguia's not an easy touch. He's not an easy touch. I think Canelo's got to get on him quick. I'm not sure if Canelo can be as effective as that anymore. I think you got to get him quick, put him in his place quick, use that experience. That's why I thought if it was a pro Canelo crowd, you know, Munguia might not freeze, but be aware of, I'm in a mega fight here now. You've been in big fights in big stadium. Now that Phoenix, I used to go back to the Phoenix fight, his last fight. It was packed out. By the way, Phoenix is like the home, that might be the new home of boxing, because it's packed out really early. Really early. And it was a brilliant atmosphere. But they were loud and they were vocal, and they loved Munguia. They really did. It was a hard night that might have been just as hard night for John Ryder than it was for going to Guadalajara. Guadalajara, did I say that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Going to Mexico for Canelo, like, to be honest, because it was like a cauldron in there. So he has his own fans, but this would be a different level for him. It will be. And I thought, if they're all pro Canelo, he might be aware of it. And I'd be a part for Canelo just to show this, and you're at the big leagues now, and I'll put the pressure on you, and you'll panic a little bit.
I wonder what that Mexican homecoming was like for Canelo, because I bet it was really, really hard work, because everybody would have felt down there that he owed them some of his time. I bet it was another level of obligation that he felt, or that other people felt that he owed them, that probably made him think, I can't really do this again, because it's just so kind of the pressure that comes with it, basically, having been away for so long and then going back home. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not rushing to do that again.
Yeah, and I also feel like, obviously financially, I don't think it makes that much sense for him either. But as far as kind of the fight week goes, yeah, I think you're right. You sort of get into a room. I mean, we're not even fighters. Like, we get into a routine of doing a fight week, and like, for him, like, doing a fight week in Vegas and doing it at home, like, and properly at home as well. He was really, like, you know, really far in there. Is completely different.
I think this is his last fight.
His last fight.
You think it's possible? Again? I think it's possible.
I think he might win. I think he'll win. But I think he might see a big enough decline to go, well, unless it's a massive fight for him, that's not Benavidez. And also, if he shows a decline here and there's an injury or something, and you can go, I'm at an age now when I'm getting injured, I gotta call it a day, where that Benavidez thing's always going to be on his shoulder. If he carries on, he don't, and he still evades Benavidez, he's just it's going to be his whole career, the outlook of how people see him will be changed dramatically. It'll end up being, he dodged, and then you look at other fighters, you sort of half dodge, like all fighters have done. You go towards the money fights, don't you? But, you know, people forget he boxed them. No, say that. You can't, we give him credit, give him fighters credit for boxing good fighters, but they, like, his good fighters were like Mayweather when he was young, but like it was a massive financial reward, and you don't lose when you lose to Mayweather. You know what I mean? It's one of those, like boxing Canelo, like you don't really lose when you lose to Canelo because you lost to bloody Canelo. As long as you put up a good display, you can come back from it unless he batters you into oblivion. But Mayweather, you know, you lose to Mayweather, you know, you've lost to the best fighter on the planet, and you've had the fortune. As long as you don't, as long as you believe in yourself, you can come back stronger from that, and you're a marketable fighter now, which he was anyway. But I mean, he learned from that fight. But I mean, he'll always be the guy who avoided Benavidez. That'll be the stain on him. So it might be, if he shows a decline again in Munguia, he might just be enough. Should be Benavidez. That's the guy. Go back to saying it should be Benavidez. Win or lose, he gets the respect he deserves. He finishes on a loss, which every fighter mostly usually does. But he gets the respect that he fought pretty much whatever point in their career, every top fighter in his weight division, which he almost pretty much did. If you look back, might have got him at different times, but then, you know, hasn't everyone sort of, like, you know, edged the percentages to their favour slightly?
His position.
He gets the same money whoever he fights. That's the truth, doesn't he? Pretty much gets the same amount of money, gets sickening too much money wherever he fights. So he can pick who he wants. Because, well, I get 5 million more. Which is loads to us, but to him, it's not worth the risk, is it? But the Benavidez give him more. I mean, that's where he put that stupid figure out. If that was him, put that stupid figure out to, you know, I'll fight him in Saudi for 500 million or something, was it?
200 million.
200 million. But 200, 500, must have. But I mean, that was like, that was pretty much saying, I'm never going to fight you.
He's saying that, though,
the Saudis can't call his bluff. They could, can they? I'm going to give you 300.
But he's been on record and said that he's just not really interested in the fight. That he says he doesn't really bring anything to the table. It's around the similar sort, well, the same does, time as
he?
That
brings,
that
he brings
came
a defeat.
Out.
He potentially brings a beat into you. Mm. That's what he brings. I think it's a great fight because Canelo slowed down enough now. And Canelo's tough and he has a great chin. And Benavidez will hold his feet, I think. So I think that would be the best fight. It might be the best for the go out. I think he gets beat now. I think I've changed my mind. I thought Canelo, when did we do the thing last year?
We do it all the time. Like every time either one of them fights, obviously it becomes a big fixture.
But
Andre in November, didn't he?
I think maybe he could beat Canelo. I mean, we'll see. I think we'll see what we see in Canelo against Munguia. That's the important part. Oh, he looks there. Munguia could beat him, by the way. I genuinely think he could beat him. The energy he has, the power he has, the size. He's a big guy. I think Canelo's massive now, but I mean, naturally, from where he's come from, I do think that Munguia can cause him problems, and I think he shows a good discipline. And the energy in his work, that's the important part of this fight, because Canelo is one-paced now. Canelo, you always used to be one, you always walk you down, but all of a sudden, he could go bam, 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 with really fast, hard shots. He doesn't really do that now, do he? It's all bam, 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 bam. No, he could have closed the ring down better against John Ryder, who boxed really well against him, but he could have closed the ring down better, and he chose not to. Or he can't do it. He can't pull the trigger. He can't accelerate his feet like he used to. And that's a sign of age, wear and tear, or just the energy is different now. You have to conserve yourself a little bit more than you used to have to because you're getting older. So, yeah, so I think it's thought with danger here for Canelo. But you've got to go with the experience, haven't you, I think? You have to go with a guy who knows a little bit more, in the trenches, and you have to see Canelo will just know a little bit too much.
Andy, Canelo, obviously 33, but this will be his 65th professional fight. Do you think there's a chance that this will be the last time we see him?
Yeah, I think there is a chance. I think there is a chance because I think he will have been thinking about his exit from the sport for a little while now. Fighters would always claim that they don't do that. He would probably deny it if asked, but I think he will have been, because in boxing it's a big, big decision, and it is really one, particularly if you're as big as him and you're the business that he is and you generate the money that he does, it is one that you get to make, much more so than in other sports, where basically the sport will essentially retire you because it will be required that you play in this tournament or play in this league, and this is the fixture that you have to fulfill and you don't have any choice about it, and they come thick and fast and they get a bit too much for you, you can't really take it anymore, and then you're done. And boxing's not quite like that. And when you're a massive name, you want to try and make sure that you get that exit right. And if he has a night against Munguia where he still wins, but it was hard, and he can feel in there that maybe, and he'll have felt this in camp if it's the case, that maybe he's not quite seeing the punches coming in the same way that he used to, and he's not able to avoid them in the same way that he used to, or if he's seeing openings but not quite able to take them in the way that he used to, then those are all clues. And that could be enough of a prompt for him to think, okay, I think it's time to go. I was talking to Froch about this last year, and we all thought that he was going to fight Chavez, but I think in his own head, after he beat George Groves a second time, that was never really going to happen, because talking to him about the build-up to the second Groves fight, he said that training for that fight, he knew that it would be his last fight. For all those reasons, that he wasn't quite able to avoid punches that previously he knew that he'd been able to avoid. I know he wasn't as big on avoiding shots as some people, Froch, but you know, he wasn't maybe able to take the sting off them or ride them in the way that he used to. And he wasn't able to capitalise on openings in the way that he used to. And so he thought, okay, one more, and then now is the right time. Because at that stage, he'd made the money. Obviously, it came really late in his career. That's not an issue for Canelo. He's made all the money you could possibly want. And what he doesn't want is to end up losing a fight, because it's really hard to go out on a defeat. If you go on one too many and it turns into a defeat, then all of a sudden you can stay in it for another three or four fights that you should never be having.
Ironically, it's sometimes the best thing for you, though.
Yeah, can be, but just so few people.
It's the full stop, isn't it?
So few people. You look at the end of careers, even with really, really good fighters, and quite often it's kind of three defeats in their last four, isn't it? They lose one and they think, I can't go out on the defeat. And then they convince themselves, and we talked about this loads, as to how it happened, and they explain it to themselves. They go back in at the same level and they lose again. And then they think, then they drop down a level, get a win, go back to that same level and they lose again. And at that point they think, right, well, that's it now. But they could really take some convincing. So if you just go on that one too many and it ends up being a defeat rather than a gritty but hard win, then that can see you stay in it then for another three or four that you really shouldn't be having.
And also there's very usually any telling the training camp. Train the sharp, your training goes well. They always say this. I know they say that all the time. You know, our training's gone well, who knows? But it's quite often it is. You don't see the decline in the gym because it's not the same intensity. But that vision you talked about, that's exactly what it is. Come fight night, you'd see the punch a millisecond too late, which means your punch resistance is not as good because you don't tense for it. Or like that, you see the opportunity, but you just haven't pulled the trigger quick enough, and then you just missed it. Where before you always just hit it, and in training you were always hitting the mark. You were always riding the shots. You were always slipping the punches because they're not fighting. Even though they're trying to spar and pattern, trying to knock you out, it's just a different intensity. And also you got the head guard on the bigger gloves. They're harder to slip, so you sort of bear that in mind. They were slipping punches and stuff and blocking and hitting. Oh, more accurate you will be. I got caught there, but actually in a fight, I'm going to make that's going to be a slip. Because I'm 2 inches thicker with the head guard. So you sort of factor all that in, so you don't see the decline in training. You're still training hard, you're feeling good. And sometimes when you get older, you have more discipline, so you make the weight better because you're more mature, so you'll discipline yourself better. And also, you've been through camps before, so you just get in that mode. It's in the ring that it appears. And that's where you need to go. Sometimes a loss, you need to realise, no, I haven't got it. Or someone needs to tell you, listen, you haven't got it, mate. And you listen to the trainers and you go, well, you know, what happened? And they go, I don't know, he was great in the gym, or she was great in the gym, but just didn't work out on the night. And you go, and then you'll lie to yourself usually and go, I didn't really run hard as I should have, or you know, my fucking fingers hurt. You'll find the excuse, he caught me early and I couldn't really recover, but next time. But for him, What's he chasing? He's won everything you can win. No, he's got all the money you could need. He should have all the respect. There'll be little things that people will talk about, but looking back, if people don't look back on his career, nothing but what a servant he's been to the sport, you're a fucking idiot. I can't believe, like, he's had been in some tremendous fights. He's boxing really good. He brought loads of money into the sport as well. He give value for money every time he fights, almost.
Think about that COVID period as well, when he cleaned up the super middleweight division. He really, at that point, like, was probably the only one who, I know there was kind of little pockets of fights, but he was the only one boxing consistently at a time when no one was boxing consistently. He was fighting the best guys in the sport, and he kind of carried the sport for about 18 months.
Yeah, set a great example.
That period of time.
Say, yeah, to show everybody. Everybody says, you can't box more than this many times a year if you're a big name. Well, you can, because I'm doing it.
Yeah. But having said that, kind of flips on, sorry to interrupt, Barry, and this is kind of on the in the same sort of mode of where he's at in his career. For me, anyway, it's been a while now since we've seen, I won't say vintage Canelo, but since we've seen Canelo put in what I'd consider, anyway, to be a good performance. I think, for me, the last one was the Billy Joe Saunders fight. I thought he was a bit sluggish against Plant. I felt like Plant boxed well and was able to frustrate him, but I felt like that fight was sort of the start of not handling this as easy as he handled his previous ones. And that's 3 years ago. That's a long time in boxing.
I think it goes back longer than that. I think the last time he's looked like he's gone into a fight thinking, I can lose this, is Golovkin 2.
Even the
pivotal fight, you know, he obviously lost. He went into that thinking, like, well, I'll batter this fella. I'll just walk him down. The arrogance he had as a super middleweight was so disrespectfully brilliant. He just thought, he looked at them all and went, yo, you're all naturally bigger. Oh, yeah, you're massive. Yeah, you're good. You're a good fighter. You're a good fighter. I'm just going to walk you down and beat you up. And make you feel like you're in the fight, by the way. Like Billy Joe Saunders. No, even Plant, actually, he left Plant a little bit too late, I thought. Like, but again, he was winning the fight. But I mean, he made that a little bit closer than it should have been. He should have pulled this. But Billy Joe Saunders looked like he won some rounds, but you could just see from the outside, it's just a matter of time. But Billy's in the fight, probably thinking he's winning and boxing really well. But Canelo's just going, oh, I can watch this now. Bam, 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 bam. Against a really good fighter, by the way. This is how disrespectfully good he is. Against Billy Joe Saunders, a really good boxer. We all know this, how good he can be on. And he's just going, oh, fucking what? Yeah, oh, good shot, mate. Well done, fucking hell. Oh, fucking shit, this fella. You can see it in his face, can you? He had no respect for him. And then when he's trying to pull the trigger, I've one of those. What's his name? Callum Smith, giant for the weight. He should have been like heavyweight a long time before he moved up. And like, just going, yeah, you're good, aren't you? Yeah, whack. Fucking have one of those on the arm. Fuck you. Feel that. And then just made him clam up. Just made all these big fighters. Like, no disrespect to them. Made really good fighters shit their pants. And then took away their strengths. But did they without really going through any gears? I think that's it's been such a long time since he's had to do since he's had to go through the gears quick and stay at a high level, stay at the high gear consistently. Otherwise, he loses the fight. I don't know if he can do that anymore. So going against a young, hungry fighter like Benavidez, which he's not going to do, is a risk not worth taking for him. And Munguia he thinks Munguia's not the same size and not the same fighter, so I might have a better chance against him. But again, you've got to put where they are in their careers, the age and the activity and what he's had to do for this last fucking 4 years or whatever it is, maybe more. He hasn't had to. The Golovkin third fight wasn't even a fight. Like, that was just ridiculous. That was just a money grab. Bivol, he was exposed there as being one paced against Bivol, who boxed really well against him, to be fair. He did. He had to ride loads of storms, and he was a naturally bigger guy, but he still had to do, every time Canelo took a rest, he punched. He went with him. He punched him back all the time. He takes a little step back, Canelo, to reassess, and he went right on him all the time. Whereas before, he'd take a step and turn Canelo, or he'd stay on there, or he'd work around the target, he'd make you feel the shot, or he'd throw in. He'd have acceleration of pace in his work, and that's not been there for a long time. And I think, I hope I'm wrong, and I wish you could tell me, but I think the last time he's had to show that consistently throughout a fight was Golovkin 2, which is 2018. Am I right in that?
think it was.
That's 2018. I'm trying to think of the fights you've had since then.
I think he's my kind of point.
He's boxed good people, sorry.
Yeah, I think he's performed well, but hasn't had that type of fight where he's had to be kind of back against the wall, drag it out of him.
It brings out the best in him.
Yeah,
brings out the energy in him. And like, once you use it or lose it.
So since then, he's boxed Rocky Fielding, which was obviously one-sided. Danny Jacobs, which was, a clearer win than the cards had it at the time. Kovalev, I thought he was poor against Kovalev. I was like, that fight.
One-paced.
Very one-paced, then got there in the end. Callum Smith.
One-paced, got there in the end.
Avni Yildirim, obviously was what it was. Billy Joe Saunders, Caleb
Plant. When Pace got there in the end.
Bivol, Golovkin. When
Pace didn't get there.
Ryder and Charlo. Again, Ryder, like the Charlo performance was really kind of...
Charlo pulled his pants.
You'd feel like the Canelo of a few years ago would have been able to, as you said, just quicken up the feet a little bit, invest to the body early, and also not throw in the big singles. I mean, we've spoken about this numerous times over the years where Canelo has gone from being at 154 pounds, he was a combination puncher. He used to throw 2-3 shots to the body, change up to the head. He was a lot more, kind of, he would layer his shots a lot more than now, where he just kind of... I can't remember what fight it really was. It might be in the Kovalev fight when he had a little bit of extra weight. And then after that, when he sort of boxed at super middleweight, is when he adopted the more kind of low output, big single shot, front foot pressure fighter.
But it worked. So why didn't he didn't need to change it? It worked for him. And also because his reputation preceded him. He'd go in the ring and people were expecting something that didn't happen. I said this in the last pod. People expecting something that hadn't happened yet. And you do that against punchers, don't you? Or people who are fast, whatever their superpower is, you're expecting it. But sometimes you can, but you wait, so you almost wait for it to happen. So he'd be two rounds up walking in because people would go, "No, I don't want to make a mistake here." Because and he'd just go, and again, make you feel it. He was the one where I got that saying from, make you feel the power early from him. He'd just go whack, hit you anywhere. The arm, mainly, even if it was obviously for Callum Smith, and you just go, fine, take him one of those. And that was it. Naz used to do it, didn't he? Jump in with a hook, almost the bell go ding. Nicky Piper used to do it. There you go. Nicky Piper go way back to the 90s from Wales. He had the fastest knockout in the world for a long time. I don't know how long it was, like 11, 12 seconds or something. He should come out every round. He threw the right hand straight away. Big tall fight that he was, Nicky Piper. And he threw that right hand straight away. First thing he threw. He had power, but it just made you wary. And if he hit you anywhere, you'd feel it and go, fucking, I gotta be on my game here. And that makes you overthink things and tense up, and then you end up overthinking things and not doing any work, and allows you haven't got to rush your work then. You can just walk up to him and just, thanks, well, you're overthinking stuff. I'll just walk up to you and go, bam, bam, bam. Where against Golovkin, people like that, he couldn't do that. You have to be sharp and accurate and throwing. I mean, if there's a gap, you have to make every use of that gap and throw in twos and threes and move after you threw the punches, very importantly. Where against the other guys, all good fighters, by the way, all of them really good fighters. Canelo, Billy Joe Saunders, Plant, they were all really good fighters, Danny Jacobs, but there was no fear factor for him. And I wonder whether he can still do that.
That's a long list you read out there, too. That's a lot of fights, and it's a lot of rounds, because stoppages that did come generally came deep, didn't they? And it's like I say, it's all the training camps, it's all the wear and tear, it's the mental pressure of being him. And when you're that big entity, that corporation, if you like, that just juggernaut, I wonder where he's at in terms of his motivation. Is the Canelo train just keeping on rolling down the track? Because how can you really stop it? I mean, he can stop it, but he's got to make a big move to stop it. Does he look at fights now and feel like, I really need to win this fight to prove myself and reach that next level? Not really, you wouldn't say. So what is it that's keeping him going? Is he just doing this because it's something that he's always done? And that's often the case.
And he loves it.
And he loves it, but what's keeping him... Is he waiting for the winner of Bivol against Beterbiev? Is that something that he really wants to do and that he'll feel that he can make happen? Because that's really... That'd be the only thing, wouldn't it? That would really get his pulse racing in the way that maybe it used to.
Yeah, to box for the undisputed light heavyweight title, but
if he didn't win, undisputed. But box the winner regardless, and that's the kind of say he lost, and it was like the Bivol defeat, and you could look at it and just agree, or it might take him a while, but maybe he could just admit to himself, if only himself, actually, that is too much light heavyweight. That's the kind of defeat that you may be able to go out off the back of, because you've got total respect for the opponent and you know yourself what happened in there. A defeat against someone like Benavidez, I don't think he could walk away off the back of that.
It's an interesting point, because for me, both Bivol and Beterbiev are hard fights, but it's the other intangibles around that, isn't it, that makes it more difficult for him to move away from it. It's more difficult for him to...
It matters who you lose to and how it happens. Look at someone like...
Because Beterbiev's a harder fight.
Yeah, you look at Hatton, and obviously Hatton was never going to retire after losing to Mayweather, but... You know, it's just like he couldn't stand Mayweather, and then the way he lost against Pacquiao meant that you can't, although he did leave it there for a long time, eventually ended up coming back, because how can you go out when you're a proud champion who's achieved so much? How can you go out off the back of that? Whereas Belly, for example, although he got knocked out by Alexander Usyk, and that sounds like a pretty brutal way to finish, he could, because it was Usyk and it was someone that he really admired, and he's really, really good. And there was no kind of shame in it, and all of those things. So, who it is,
Cotto
definitely matters.
Sorry, Cotto summed it up. It might have been in the defeat against Canelo. And you ever seen him and his wife in the ring?
Yeah.
And it's just in the
change rooms.
I was fucking crying. I was like, because it brings every fighter back to there. They didn't have that conversation, but to when you know what the fuck. And she said, "Why? That's enough now." And he went, "I cry now." I was just talking about it. And I won't cry. I feel like crying. And he went, "This is all I do. What? That's all I know. What can I do?
Paraphrase. Yeah.
What can I do? This is what fucking hell. What can I do? This is what I do. And that's it. It's your identity. What else do I do?" Like, he didn't need the money. Didn't need the adulation. Cotto. Everyone loved Cotto because he fought everyone, didn't he? He didn't care. He fought, win or lose. He was brilliant, and he's one of my favorite fighters to watch for a long time. Miguel Cotto was beautiful to watch, but he's like, "What? Well, no more now." She said, and he's like, "But that's what." What else do I do? I don't know anything else. This is my
life. I mean, it's so like difficult, isn't it?
To all the money they got and all the fame and all that, we forget they weren't always famous and rich. They were from the slums or council estates or nothing or nobodies, or, you know, the thick as shit like most of us are. That's what, you know, we're not going to be accountants or anything, are we? Or like university kids like you, or butlers like you. And so you just think, so boxing's changed your life. But you are that kid, and like it gives you something, and it's you. That's you're always known as the Barry the Boxer, or Kendall the Great Canelo, or Hatton, Ricky Hatton. There's only one Ricky Hatton, or Hatton Wonderland. What does he know? It's worse for those fighters because they have all the money and the fame, everything, but they have no structure in their life, and they retire. That's where they all go to drinks and drugs and do stupid things. People like me, in the end, we have to get a job. You know, whether it might be a few years after, but in the end, you have to get a job, and because you're not famous, no one remembers you. It don't matter so much. So me having less money and having no, having not being a famous boxer helped me continue after boxing, because I had to get a job, and it wasn't like it wasn't demeaning. I wasn't like fucking a superstar who had to go and like run a pub, which is what I did in the end.
Yeah. I mean, you look at ones who have really got it right, and they're not. You can't think of loads, can you? In terms of big stars like Lennox Lewis. Yeah, he got that right. He left loads of money on the table in fights he could have had, but he got right.
He had 95 million, and he hasn't spent a fucking penny. Brilliant.
Andre Ward, you know, I don't think any of us really saw that coming. I didn't. And he definitely left got a lot of money on the table, but he just decided, no, that's enough now. I've done what I needed to do. History shows you how hard it is.
But let me tell you what, they don't walk away happy.
No,
I mean, and they've had problems ever since.
Well, look at Mayweather; he
can't leave it alone.
No, of course he can't.
It's the double-edged sword, isn't it? In order to be a Canelo, or in order to be a Mayweather, or I mean, I don't know, you got outright, or an Andre Ward, or somebody like that, you have to operate at such a level of obsession with the sport and such a level of dedication that when it comes time,
it's not
to
a healthy
off,
way to live.
It's not a healthy way to live. It's an addiction,
selfish.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's
like
selfish.
Addiction, you talk about quitting all the time, but you can't do it.
All these great fighters are selfish. You have to. I mean, the selfishness they need to be successful. I mean, I wasn't good enough, but I couldn't have been that. I don't think I could have been as selfish as it takes to be that good, to be that. No, they literally don't. No one matters to them. I mean, when people say about their fights, you know, I thought about my missus, my kids, and you don't think about no one but yourself in a fight. It's just, it's all about, and it should be just about you because you're the one getting hurt. But like most great boxers who have great careers, I like that throughout their career, everyone takes second best. Everyone. Their family suffer. Everyone suffers for you to chase your dream. And it happens. It happened to me and my family. Like, it happens to all families, really. But I mean, the ones who are truly successful, their kids and their wife, as much as they love them, they give them everything they want. Time. They don't get the time with them. Yeah. They suffer. And you talk to every boxer.
They come second.
They'll tell you. And they have to come second.
Yeah.
But it's also, I don't know if the balance is right. Because they're still your kids. You never get that time back. You never get that time back with your kids and your wife. They suffer. The relationships suffer from it. Because then all of a sudden you retire, your wife goes, hang on, it's my turn. And you go, what do you mean your turn? She goes, hang on, I've been boxing for us. And she goes, yeah, but like, you neglected me for years. Like, so you could go chase your dream. And like, oh, I earned all this money. I'm going to fuck about your money. Not everyone cares about money.
Yeah.
No, not about
two,
money.
Two really interesting questions to ask, ask any retired athlete, but particularly one who's got to the top is, did you enjoy it? Was it worth it? And you'd be surprised by some of the things I'd say, because a lot of the time, they don't really enjoy it. Because winning is more pure relief at not losing. It can often be that. It's the relief that kind of fuels the euphoria. That's often how it is.
That's brilliant.
And when they get to the end, was it worth it? I don't know, you know, because the price they pay is absolutely absurd. Like I said, it is an addiction. Like, as you said, it's not a healthy way to live your life. That's why there are so few of them.
It depends on what stage of career you're at.
I don't envy it. No. When you see it, even in glimpses up close, I just think, I couldn't do that. I wouldn't even want to do that.
But it depends on what stage of your life you're at. Like, you look back now and I think it was all worth it. But there was a stage in my life and I thought that wasn't worth it. Like, the fuck, where am I now? When you're in a bad place, it's not worth it. When you're in a good place, it is worth it. And that sort of thing.
Yeah, you need to leave it a bit of time, I guess, before you ask those questions, before they can really properly answer them. But it's, you know, they're proper head scratches for people when you ask them that, because it's just, you know, it makes them question everything they've done in a way. It's like, what was that all about?
I remember Andy Scott asked George Groves it when George had just retired. We both went to Groves' house to interview him the day he announced his retirement, and Andy came afterwards. And I remember watching it back, and it's the first question he asked George, and George obviously sits down and says, get ready, I'm going to talk about the Carl Froch fight, and
it worth it?
And then the first question, he said, so George, throughout all the ups and downs and all the highs and the lows, the this and that, it was brilliant, and go and watch it if you haven't. He says, was it worth it? And you can just see George go like,
you know what, probably
yeah,
not.
Yeah, like, yes. Because he's braced himself for all of the questions apart from that one, and it's got,
Again, though, that depends. You have, so many different answers. Couldn't get the word off. So many different answers.
You're on fire today with the vocabulary, though. Oh, yeah. You were about to put multitude in there, weren't you?
There's so many different answers, depending on where you are in your life.
Yeah.
About that. No, it's not worth it. I don't know. I wish I regret it. I wish I would have stayed in school. Or, you know, oh, mate, I wouldn't change it for the world. Ultimately, you finish on that. I wouldn't change it for the world. Because I tell everyone, like, you chase the dream. Wherever it ends up in the end, most people in their life go from whatever, they have a job and you might want to be that certain job, you might want to, but it's not a dream really. You get a job and that's fine. Some of you have a bad life and you might have a great lovely life, but I mean, to chase a dream is a gift, and it's usually on the back of other people. Like, your parents suffer because they take you everywhere. Like, the things my dad had to do for me just so I could chase a dream, I can never pay it back. The nights he had to drive me to the gym, drive me to the club shows, fly to Scotland to watch my brother box, the things he had to do for his kids so we could do something we enjoyed that might not be anything, just to, you know, if he wants to do any, and he shows an aptitude, he wants to be good, and it's a pro around the country and all around the world following you just so you could chase a dream. You can't repay that back. But I mean, to do that, you look back and go, I did that. No, you do that in your 20s, you can settle down in your 30s and make a life for yourself if you're not going to earn loads of money. That, I think that's important. What Darren Barker said, they've been in the Boxing News, they did an interview in the Boxing News, and they said, well, it's something like, would you change anything? And if you could go back, and he just said, I'd enjoy it more. I'd take stock, I'm paraphrasing, I'd take stock more. Because you're in the moment, you just go with it, and you don't really...
That's something that's always really... That's something that's always really struck me, that's always really struck me.
It's the same for us, what we do now, isn't it? Like, you take it for granted, but look where we're going around the world. Yeah. Where are you taking us? Took me ages to get that in. But I'm the king of Segway.
it's something I've always thought, you know, when you're observing it at close quarters, and I do think kind of the mentality has maybe shifted a little bit towards enjoyment being more allowed over the last few years. I think it has anyway, but there was definitely a spell, and it might be because it coincided with me starting to do this job in 2000, it was, and therefore you're just up close in a way that you've never been before. But there definitely seemed to be a period where it was almost like celebrating was for losers. If you celebrated, it was because you were surprised you had won and you weren't expecting to win, which means you're a loser. You know, real winners always expect to win, so it's not a big deal. You know, that wasn't something unpredictable that happened there. That's what we expected. Right, bosh, on to the next one. I mean, what the fuck is that? But there was a lot of that. You know, there was a lot of that in the 2000s. I certainly feel like it's not just something I imagined. And
that's
all of a sudden...
That O was important, wasn't it? More than ever back then, I think.
Yeah, and that's not... That for me is, people did sustain it, so I'm talking nonsense really, but that just seemed to me to be a joyless and unsustainable way to live your life. But then the more you look at it, you think maybe that life does have to be joyless and borderline unsustainable, which is why I would never have wanted to do it.
And why the people who reach the very, very top are an even smaller percentage of those who reach the actual sport themselves. Right.
Absolutely brutal.
We're going to have to move on. We've got about 20 minutes left, and it's just occurred to me that there's another fight a couple of days after this fight that we should probably spend a little bit of time talking about for the next 10, 15 minutes or so.
Boring fight, though.
Barry, going to come to you first. I am, of course, talking about the undisputed super bantamweight world champion, Naoya Inoue, who returns against Mexican bad boy Luis Neri on the 6th of May in Tokyo. Explosive fight. Been a fight many, many years in the making. It's been one that the real losers amongst us, have been very much looking forward to. There's a lot of backstory and there's a lot of history between Luis Neri, Naoya Inoue, and indeed the great fighting nation of Japan.
He might not get in. He still might not get in. I'm not convinced he's going to get in the country.
Yeah, they'll let him in. If he wins, he might not get out. but he'll let him in.
Imagine if he missed the weight and they went through with the fight anyway.
He might not get out of the airport, actually. I can't believe he won't do anything stupid. Neri, to be honest. But it's a good fight. But there's only one winner. I can't see how Inoue just doesn't chin him at some point. Just because Neri will just jump all over him. And I think with that, he walks onto a shot. I think with Inoue, he's not unhittable. But he keeps his shape all the time and his balance is brilliant. So even when you rush him, he can always land with a decent shot because he's never off balance, ever. And the moving up in weight, I thought, because he looked so slender, because he looks slender, doesn't he? But I think it's helped him. I thought it might be a hindrance. I don't think it has, actually. I don't think it has at all. I think he feels like he got more time. To sit down on his shots, to pick his punches. I do. I think it's a brilliant fight. I think it'd be really entertaining because Neri won't stop trying as long as he's in there. And he'll have success, I think, unless he gets caught with the first shot. But ultimately, it's hard. You can't bet against Inoue. That's the truth of it. And in Japan as well, which he's a superstar in, Paul Malignaggi. He's an absolute super... No, was it Paul Malignaggi? Not Paul Malignaggi. Sorry, Paulie. It was the other one. Who was saying that?
Tim Bradley,
man. Come on, Tim. You haven't got everything to go to America. But
he's actually boxed in America as well, which is a stupid thing.
Right. Yeah, he has boxed.
And boxed their best fighter, by the way, at that weight.
So
he's it's a good fight, though. It's a really good fight.
But it's been a fight, Andy, that as I mentioned, we have been looking forward to for a long, long time. That first Shinsuke Yamanaka fight, now infamous Shinsuke Yamanaka fights. The first one was in August of 2017, which, of course, Mr. Neri decided to not make. No, he made the weight for that one. That was the the performance enhancing drug one. Anyway, must remember to get that right. But he has been on the outside. I say on the outside. He's obviously subsequently won a world title. He's been a world champion and been a very good fighter, Neary. But it's been this big, big fight that he's been calling out for a long time. Obviously, he had the fight with Brandon Figueroa. He stopped to the body, which is a very entertaining fight. Yeah. He had that unbelievable fight last year with Azat Hovhannissian.
That's the one I was thinking.
Brilliant
was
fight. That unbelievable fight. So he is as equipped as anybody to step up to the plate and challenge Nora in a way, but I'm assuming, as Barry has just pointed to there, that you'll be backing the monster.
Yeah, I think you have to. You're flying in the face of all logic, really, if you don't. But at the same time, he is proven, Neary, and it's not like anyone will ever feel like they can turn down a shot at Undisputed, but if ever anybody might have felt like their particular circumstances would make it advisable not to do it, then it would be his, because going to Japan is going to be an interesting experience for him. But he's the kind of person who you feel would probably relish all of that and manage to use it to his advantage.
He's the anti-hero, isn't he? He's a bad boy. Boxing and needs really, that as well. Yeah, as much as it's not ideal sometimes, we do need those unapologetic bad boys in the sport, and he is one of them.
You are. I go to this all the time. Danny Joshua is the meme. If you're like, you want them to be absolute monsters in the ring, but then like lovely, genteel, like friendly people outside the ring, like you are. Like, I mean, we ideally would love that, you know, especially for young kids and role models, but sometimes
it's not realistic.
Fighters are just horrible, bad people which have found an avenue, an outlet, and it's, they can legally hurt people. That's sometimes what it is. Mike Tyson was an advocate there, wasn't he? Be who you are. If you're a nasty, horrible prick, be that. Be yourself. Be authentic. Because alongside you then will be a lovely guy who's brilliant as well, just as good as you, where everyone's going to want to love. And like, and you'll make more money being the bastard than you will be in the beauty, I would say. Or the beast and the beauty. I don't know. I like to swear. But yeah, I think it's still, so like him being who he is, an absolute raving lunatic.
If he's trained well, then we could see something pretty interesting, I think.
Oh, he'd be fit. He'd be ready.
He's, like you say, he's got the credentials. He's got the ability, and when he has the ability to get it right, temperament wise as well. I mean, down the last few years, I've seen him appear on cards every now and again, and then all of a sudden he wasn't, and there'd be some argument about something, and you really wondered where he was going, to be honest, and he kept persisting with trying to make bantam, didn't he, and then would miss it again, and you just think, what are we even doing here, really? But he's still in the sport, and I think he'll be relishing the opportunity.
Box David Carmona at super featherweight in October of 2022. He was 128.5 pounds for that. But yeah,
just a guy who can fight, isn't he? That's just a guy who can fight.
Yeah, and Carmona's been there or thereabouts, hasn't he, for a long time. But this has been a fight that's been talked about for a long time since Neary was up at bantamweight, and obviously the Yamanaka stuff happened. He's kind of actively pursued this fight. I mean, he's talking all of that shit, man, that you want to hear from somebody who's going into the lion's den, and he's saying Inoue's overrated and overhyped, and he's this and he's not that.
That's great. You want him to go in all guns blazing, don't you?
That's
what he's doing.
And like, I felt like Fulton kind of sort of stopped a long way short of that, and he was just saying things like, yeah, but when I go over there, it'll be different, and it's not been the same way as Neary. It's just like, you're shit, mate. I'm going to batter you in front of all these people.
I don't think it's not an act with him. He's just like that, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly, 100%. Like, he's very much like, he doesn't, one of the things that, with Neary, though, is I think he's an offensive fighter, and he carries good power, but he's a very good fighter, very technically good, like tricky southpaw. That Hovhannissian fight, he boxed really nicely on the back foot there. He does a lot of things, Barry, that aren't your kind of typical Mexican fighter traits.
No, but he will, like, you have to be a, he'll, I think he might try and, I can't see, either way you look at it, against them, anyway, you're in trouble. Like, I think you've got to put pressure on him, but you're going to walk onto a shot. Then I think, maybe you try and get him to fall over his front foot a little bit.
He just doesn't, does he?
Exactly. You don't want to be on the end of those shots. That's where all the power is. When he throws a nice long, like, left hook or long right hand, don't even turn into the shots and you'll be on the end of that, you're in trouble. So you think the best is to take, is to get close, to roll underneath, stay close, which he can do that, and he can be busy as well. But you've got to, I mean, you've got to be more than busy, you've got to hurt him. And again, he's not an unhittable target, Inoue, but he's hard to hit clean often. And he's, and with that, though, he's not panicking. He's just thinking about creating the space to catch you in the gaps in your throwing punches. So I just can't see it. I always thought with Inoue, it'd be that moving up in weight's going to catch him. But who knows? He'd be super middleweight in 5 years' time. Still knocking people out. He'd be like a pint-sized super middleweight. But yeah, but I think because the way Inoue fights, and he has got intelligence, but he can throw a lot of punches, I think it'll make it a really good, intriguing fight. Not intriguing, an exciting fight, because he'll be trying to work anyway. I think that's pretty much what'll happen. I think if he gets on his bike and starts to outbox him, I can't see he's going to feel he can win that way.
Yeah, and he just
so he won't, so he won't do it. Yes,
yeah, and he does it for little bits and pieces of the fight, doesn't he? He likes to have it.
Well, he'll move around to attack, won't he?
And but once he's in there, he likes to have it with you.
I think with Inoue, you can't afford to take that step out and have a look and go again. Once you're there, you got to try and stay there.
Yeah,
and just try and keep pushing him back.
A big ask for Lewis Neary. Monday the 6th? Monday the 6th of May, which is obviously why we've...
Be like midday for us, won't it, I think?
Yeah, lunchtime.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's on Sky.
I'll still be in Vegas, so it'll be in the middle of the night. So brilliant. So nice. The one good thing about... Not one good thing, but one of the main good things about Japanese boxing, watching it at like 11 o'clock in the morning here, I'm going to go over there and it's still going to be the fucking middle of the night. So it'll be like 4 o'clock in the morning. But whatever, small price to pay. Okay, I think we're about there now. We're about there for the end of today's Canelo Munguia and a little bit of a Inoue Neary preview. Now, all that is left is for us to do our predictions. So we're good at these at the minute. So Andy, going to come to you first. We're going to start with this weekend, Canelo Alvarez against Jaime Munguia for all the marbles at super middleweight.
I'll say Canelo points, but hard fight. A clear enough winner, but... if this makes sense, close enough that people will ask questions.
Barry?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same, actually. I think it'd be close-ish. I think he wins, but it'd be close and hard fight. Too hard for what he thinks. And it might be the question where he think he avoids Benavidez even further. I think that's the tag on his head now. I think he's if he gets a conclusive win, he'll fancy Benavidez maybe. If he doesn't, then he's gonna. That's why I say this might be his last fight, because he might think I haven't got it anymore. So yeah, but I think he wins. I think Canelo points.
I think Canelo wins the fight. I do feel like Munguia's more cavalier attitude might get him in trouble, because we've not seen anybody approach a Canelo fight like that in a while.
That's true.
And if you remember, it was something that we didn't speak about, just trying to kind of
a lot of been thinking Inoue about thing. Survival, haven't they?
Yeah, or outboxing him and using that kind of Mayweather, Lara, Bivol sort of stay on the outside. Whereas Munguia, I do feel will. I don't think he has the technique or the discipline to stay like that for 12 rounds anyway, but I don't see him wanting to do that. And I feel like...
He was more disciplined against Ryder, though, I thought.
He was, but...
He didn't jump into his attacks.
In the fight before that, against Sergey Derevianchenko, he was hit a lot and hurt a lot. And I just feel like in between him throwing, I think Canelo's going to catch him or something. I think he's going to stop him. But... it wouldn't surprise me if it's a tricky fight up to that point, and I do expect Munguia to be fresh. I just feel like Munguia, throughout his career, really, when he gets hit, I mean, to be fair to him, obviously he's unbeaten and he manages to see a way through it, but he's not been hit by anybody who hits as hard as Canelo. And
as clean.
And I feel like he might walk into something that he doesn't see coming. So I'm gonna go for Canelo by stoppage. Which is something that I was wrong about against Jermell Charlo, but we go again. Barry placed my first ever sports bet, like a Vegas sports book for that, and lost, so that was good. Barry, Noya Inoue against Lewis Neary.
Yeah, I think Inoue. Do you think Inoue?
When?
It's not going the distance. I think around 7.
Andy?
Yeah, I think the same really, but I'll say a little bit later then.
Yeah, I think those middle rounds as well, sort of somewhere between round 5 and 8.
Yeah,
I think body shot. Inoue by body shot KO.
Oh, it's very specific. Put a bet on that.
Yeah.
Can you do body shot betting?
I don't think so. No, they've just added betting on the punches scored and the punches thrown and all of that stuff.
You can't do that, can you?
You can.
Yeah, how can you do that though? Who's doing it?
You can bet on it. It's just to get the data from CompuBox.
CompuBox is the,
yeah, right. So they take that. So started that, but I don't know whether or not.
Can you bet on power punches?
Yes. No. Yeah.
Because I'd have an issue.
We haven't got time with that. We go for every single time we talk about that. But yeah, I'm going to go for Inoue in the middle rounds, sort of 5, 6, 7, 8, and I think he'll stop him to the body. Game. I think Neary's going to really try and win, and it's going to be really not going to end well for him. I think his
good
kind
for
of
us, though.
Yeah, great to watch, and I expect him to give Inoue some shit in the build up as well, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah,
because I mean, a lot of the
see
stuff
what they
that
make
you,
of that.
But a lot of the stuff that you hear about Inoue is, and you get this from a lot of like elite level fighters, is like he does have that sort of bit of fucking chip on his shoulder. And I'm Naoya Inoue. Yeah,
of course,
fuck
he is.
You.
Yeah. You know what my mate used to say to me? Everyone can't be wrong. My mate was like a child star at boxing. Didn't make it in the end, bless him. But he had the ability. Clayton from Barry, brilliant. And he used to go, because he loved himself. Like good looking kid, but he loved himself. And I go, everyone can't be wrong. If people can tell you great, and that's what they have, don't they? Anyway, everyone keeps telling me I'm great. I am great, and I'm proving I'm great.
We've seen in the past, haven't we, when like people have sort of dared to question Inoue and sort of the stuff it says. You'll always see like a translated tweet, and then you click on it and you go, "Oh bloody hell, that was a bit spicy, Naoya." Mm. So anyway, yeah, I expect Neary to goad him and goad him, and then
yeah. Pay the price.
Yeah, pay the price in quite spectacular fashion. So I'm going to go for Inoue by body shot knockout in the middle rounds.
By the way, Inoue is the most genteel looking assassin I've ever seen in my life.
There's one photo of him, and then there's the photo of Golovkin, where Golovkin's like wearing like the granddad cardigan.
Yeah,
like, these two are like the most dangerous men.
Yeah, that's a great photo. Yeah, that's a brilliant one. That.
But okay, let us know in the comments. That brings us to an end of our preview show this week. Let us know in the comments, and also, of course, on the Boxing News app. Who's going to win this weekend? Will it be Canelo versus Canelo Ormanguia, or will it be Naoya Inoue or Lewis Neary? Let us know, and we'll catch up with you next time.
On my mind.